Welcome to East Meets West. I'm Olga Bataman.
I'm Tara Reid.
And of course, this episode is dedicated to the situation unfolding in the Middle East, the US-Israeli bombing of Iran, the killing of the country's supreme leader that has already set the whole region on fire that we're witnessing now.
And you know, Olga, about, as you know, 3 days before the bombing, I was live on RT and I predicted that Saturday Donald Trump would strike. And it's not like I'm a seer. It was the buildup that was happening. And also, Donald Trump has a pattern now where when he's in negotiations with a country, he'll go in and strike, usually on a Saturday because the markets are closed. And that's exactly what he did. He was pushing for regime change. Claiming that Iranians wanted this. So we have a guest, a really special guest today from Iran, Tehran, who can really set the record straight on what it's like on the ground and what it's like from the perspective of the Iranian people. And that is Elman Abedini, who is a journalist, a specialist in international relations, and she is also the director of public relations for Press TV. Welcome, Elman.
Hello.
Ms. Abedini, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to East Meets West. And first of all, our sincerest condolences to the loss of your supreme leader, dozens of Iranian officials, 160 innocent girls that were killed at the elementary school at Minab. From what I know, around 160 patients of the Gandhi Hospital in Tehran, 16 volleyball players, and all others that I cannot even name.
Deepest condolences.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, thank you for having me, and thank you for your solidarity. And beside all of these, there are many civilians and innocent people that still they are under the rubble because last night, they targeted Tehran Grand Bazaar. And if you were in Tehran, you know that's where is Grand Bazaar, and there are many civilians around there. Although it was night, but still there were many civilians there. And also they targeted many huge buildings that there were next to just civilian building. And it's supposed to, our death toll risen sharply.
Elham, but from what I saw, at least it was reported that there were, when people learned about this killing, this cruel killing of your supreme leader, they fled into the streets. I saw squares that were flooded by thousands of people that seemed not to be scared of forthcoming shillings and bomb attacks. Is it this way in Tehran that people are not scared of the bombing to fall on them and they're going into the streets to express the terrible situation that's happening to their country, the loss of the supreme leader and dozens of others?
Actually, I can say yesterday morning, as soon as the television announced officially that unfortunately we lost our supreme leader, people just, before any coordination, before any management, they just came to the street because we feel that we need to make some kind of solidarity with other people and see other people who are mourning for the supreme leader. As you know, there are many Persian languages, television states such as international or even BBC Persian, and they try to make a separation between people. And they try to say that people and Iranian people are not upset, Iranian people are even happy. And we need to go to the street and see other people and see everyone are upset and everyone are mourning for this loss. Even I myself see some people that maybe in kind of hijab or some ideology thing, we had some differences. But still, they knew that the person who tried to make stability in the country, in the even region, was Ayatollah Khamenei. And this loss is not a loss for just Iran. This is lost for all the region because he were the person who stand against Israeli regime. I don't mean that Now we do not have Ayatollah Khamenei and our old policies would be changed. No, it's not. But I can say they have to wait for our retaliation response against what they've done against our supreme leader and also other political actors and military actors and also our innocent civilians.
Ilham, we'll discuss these regime change plans and everything, but to give our viewers like a comprehensive view of what's going on the ground, let's just go in kind of chronological order, okay, if you don't mind. So I was in Geneva on Friday that again hosted two negotiation processes on Iran and on Ukraine. The one on Iran was behind the closed doors. From what I know, there was no announcement made whatsoever. The parties were kind of working on the potential agreement. And then, like one day after, boom, and the country is bombed. With no explanation, no pretext given even to the American public, you know, to justify this attack somehow. So, what do you think, like, happened in Geneva? What was not Iran willing to comply with? Or would they attack anyway, aiming at the regime change? And why now? Why it happened at this specific moment?
Let me mention about the Iranian public opinion about this war. No one got surprised. Really, no one got surprised. Just after 12-day war, they imposed against us and that kind of ceasefire that they announced. We were, every day, we were prepared for this war. And we knew that Israeli regime and also the United States would not get rid of this region and they would launch war again. And again, this time, after this negotiation happened, I myself said that, okay, all officials say that this negotiation is so positive, we are close to agreement, so they would launch a war against us because of the history, because of our experience. And as Tara mentioned, it's just Trump pattern. Not even Trump pattern, it's the United States pattern. And they try to make some plot for you and giving mask on their military intervention or any other plan that they have. And also, I have to mention that last month, we faced some kind of terrorist activities in Tehran and also other cities, that there are many evidences that it was funded by Mossad and CIA. So it was not really surprising. So I want to emphasize that Iran was completely ready for agreement. I, as a journalist who were in the many meetings and even off the record meetings, and I just had speeches from different officials of our foreign ministry, our government. They all said that we are ready for agreement, and even Iran had really good suggestions for them, a good proposal for them, and even it seems that the United States accepted and confirmed those proposals. And everything was great, and it was making more doubtful that something is not right here.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and as for the pretext, at least voiced over in any way, I heard two of them. One was that Iran was getting closer to the nuclear bomb, which even IAEA General Director General was not confirming. So there was no proof, even by the agency that. You know, they're specialists in this field. If someone knows what's going on in this field, the IAEA should know. But, I mean, he was not confirming anything like that ever. And from what I heard, like, also the United States is calling it a preemptive strike, but even Pentagon didn't give any proofs that Iran was going to attack.
No, and further, as you may know, in the U.S. Constitution, there is a requirement for any action like this to go to Congress, and it has to be voted on and debated on because it's an act of war. What they're trying to say is this wasn't an act of war. This was some sort of defense against terrorism. So when you're listening to the discourse in the West, What are some of your thoughts around this and the opinions of the Iranian people when they're hearing this sort of muddled discourse and, you know, Trump's administration taking action with really no cause, as Olga pointed out?
Actually, Olga mentioned about the IAEA reports. I want to mention another repetitive pattern that this time, again, we had a report from Gerusi just 1 or 2 days before this launching war, just the same as before the what's happened in Juan. Again, that time, Gerusi made an completely political statement and without any evidences, making some doubt against Iran nuclear issue. But I think that 12-day war and also this time war is kind of turn point in Iran's history. Because maybe before that, some Iranians even think that the problem is our nuclear program. But Donald Trump said that we completely destroy your capability in nuclear. So what are we talking about?
Like half a year later.
Nuclear, yeah.
For nuclear field, yeah. It needs time, it takes time. Look, so were they so unsuccessful half a year ago that half a year later Iran is getting closer to nuclear weapon again? It sounds ridiculous, doesn't it?
Right, and now they're shifting the argument, right? You had representative, a congresswoman, Luna, who was speaking for the Trump administration, saying that the reason they're going in is Iranians have killed thousands of Americans. When the reporter pushed back and said, where's the statistic coming from? What Americans? What? And she just sort of said, well, you know, terrorism. She obviously got flustered. It was a disaster of an interview because she had no statistics to back up her claims. But this is sort of the rhetoric that's coming from Mossad and from CIA, that they're pushing out talking points to these representatives in the media. What would you say to Americans claiming there's some sort of terrorist plots against Americans by Iran? And where is she getting these statistics? Where is she getting this?
Actually, there is a map that map of Iran and all the United States military bases is around Iran. And comically, it said that, sorry, we made our country inside of your military bases.
Yeah, so close to American military state.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, we are living here. We are living in this country, in this region, and you come here into our region thousands of kilometers away from your country. And how dare you actually say that we want to make terrorist plot against your military officers? You are in our region. And actually, there is no evidence that shows Iran making any terrorist activities against them. They launching war against Afghanistan, against Iraq, and it is completely obvious that they have enemies and they would face resistance in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and other countries. When you make military intervention in other countries, they would resist against you. Right. And this is not Iran's fault. And even they claim that they are proxies of Iran, but they are not proxies of Iran completely. It's obvious. We have just same aims. All resistance groups in the region, not only in the region, even in the Latin America, even in the America, even in the Africa and other countries, any places that they want to make kind of resistance against their hegemony, against their imperialism, they say this is a proxy group, but there is no need for any proxy or any management or coordination. This is obvious that they would resist against you to gain their dignity, their freedom. It is obvious.
Elham, if I may ask you, since you said that your country was completely prepared to what's happened, and I mean it's quite understandable. There was such a build-up in the Persian Gulf. Let me ask you straight: why the supreme leader allowed this to happen? Because we know that Iran is very sophisticated in safety constructions. Why was he killed in his own residence in the middle of the day?
Maybe it's kind of ideological thing for me, at least, but it is kind of dignity for me as an Iranian civilian that see even the supreme leader just likes other people working daily in his residential building, because there were many propaganda that even say he was fled to Russia or other countries, or he's underground. But it completely shows that how much he tried to be actually beside Iranian people. Even he had many meetings during recent days with people. I want to say, maybe if you know the context of Iranian political power, it would be more understandable. I don't want to say even it is different about the president or the ministers, but the supreme leader is the one that people know him not as a political one, not as a political actor. We know him as a father of the people.
Like spiritual
leader. Spiritual leader. And so we want to see him and know he is with us and beside of us. And I think this is kind of difference between the Iranian political system and other countries. I don't want to say even about President Pezeshkian, I want to say he had to make more security. But about the leader, even we can see that the supreme leader was actually there with his family, his daughter, actually. And all of these things make us sense that he were really live with us. And he know what are our problems, our threats, and what's happened for Iranian people. And I think these are really essential for the supreme leader of Iran.
I know that there was a
bomb. At the same time, I want to mention that still there was some security issues. Maybe you heard in news last week, for instance, a meeting that the supreme leader had with some officials of Iran get canceled because of some threats. I want to say that it does not mean that the supreme leader wanted to make this happen. And he had some kind of security issues for sure. And there were military and also security personnel around that residential zone. But this is not the in personality of the supreme leader of Iran to go on underground or fled to other countries.
He was just behaving with dignity.
Right, exactly. And, you know, Russian President Vladimir Putin made a statement that this was an evil act as well, and that hunting and assassinating a leader is a violation of humanity's law, but also international law. So, yeah, and unfortunately, the United States has a reputation for trying these tactics, using these tactics to force their way rather than diplomacy. What is the mood now with the officials going forward about any negotiation with the United States? Is there any hope of getting to that place, or right now you're a nation in mourning, I assume, and in crisis? They just bombed a hospital. You know, it's really a crisis. What are your thoughts right now and moving forward in the next days and weeks to come?
If I may just add, President Trump, just the other day, he said that we may discuss this issue if they're going to satisfy us, again, not giving any specific details, not giving any specific substance of what can be discussed and in which way Iran should or can satisfy. I mean, just general satisfaction, yeah, if they're going to satisfy us.
I've heard that it's about mineral rights and oil. But, you know, go on and give your...
Yeah, exactly. The problem is that there is no exact issue. What are we talking about? This is missile program? No. This is nuclear issue? No. Regional, what they call proxies? No. I suppose that their ultimate goal is regime change, and they try to make it happen by any tools. They would use sanctions. They are using this for many years, and these sanctions, really, I want to say, the consequence of these years of sanctions is not really less than this direct war. And you in Russia faces some kind of these sanctions, and we face for many years. And the consequence is so bad. And also trying for coup trying to making terrorist activities. And now military war. These are just different tools. They just change their plots. And the ultimate goal is another thing. And even they don't have any clear plan for negotiation, not now, not in Geneva, or even before that. They try to make an excuse. When you answer some questions, they made other excuses. Last night, I were in Tajrisha Square, and people were in the streets, and it was interesting for me that people chanting that we don't want negotiation with the United States, and they ask IRGC and our military power to keep going on this war. I want to say that Iranian people, absolutely, we are damaging because of this war. What we know now is that this is the only tool that we have. We have to make this, every country in the region have to pay costs for hosting American interests, American military bases, and allow American and the Israeli regime come close to these countries and also Iran. And this is time, this is a turn point in history. It can be a turn point in our history that every country in the region, even outside of the region, even about the China, about Russia, about Pakistan, to understand that how much the United States and Israeli regime are the actors that you cannot trust them. And anytime they feel kind of threat, they would bombard you. And I want to mention what happened about Qatar just some months ago. Israeli regime make a strike against Qatar. Qatar is a country that kind of neutral country. Right. But they made some excuses against them, and they violate their sovereignty.
Do you think that Donald Trump is compromised, and this is about the Epstein files, and that he's bending a knee to Bibi Netanyahu? I'm not trying to take the onus off America, because America's doing this along with Israel. But do you feel like it's a wag? We call it the wag the dog, right? Kind of scenario. I mean, what are your opinions about that?
Actually, I understand that what context you want to say, and it could be right. But I myself, because of the reading of the history of the United States enemy against Iran, I think that we cannot make a separation between the United States and Israeli regime and to try to say that Israeli regime dragged Trump into the war, and Trump had to and forced to make this war. I actually confirm that maybe Donald Trump actually made this decision because of Netanyahu, and it was one factor. But we cannot separate between them and say that no, the United States doesn't want this war. The ultimate goal of the United States, for sure, after the Islamic Revolution, was the regime change, and they would use any tools, all of these, as I mentioned before. So I don't think that this is kind of dragging to the war, but maybe this intensity and this regional war was not something that predictable by Donald Trump. Just 1 hour or 2 hours after the they launched war against Iran, we respond, and our retaliation response was against their targets in the region, as we vote before and we warned before. And I think it was not predictable for Donald Trump and the United States government.
Alham, yes, I agree with you here that I think the ultimate goal that they were pursuing for ages, actually, was the regime change. But will it work? Because from what we know, there are succession mechanisms in Iran. So the new supreme leader will be elected within a couple of days, from what I know. There are algorithms to do that. Donald Trump said that he has three perfect candidates as a leader of Iran. So, I mean, who can that be? can it ever work? Can they impose some leader on a country like Iran, resisting for decades, going through you know, all of those sanctions for decades, striving for its survival, so that someone from across the ocean can impose a leader on them? And like whom? The Sheikh's son? You know, I think he's...
the Sheikh hasn't been there 50 years. I mean, like...
Would Iranian people ever accept him, or like people like him imposed from across the ocean?
Actually, I think that now they understand that the regime change is not a plot that they can achieve in one phase. And they try to make some kind of unrest, riots, and terrorist activities inside Iran. And I think what happened last month in Iran was kind of the first phase to test this. And they try, even I heard that Israeli regime and the United States made some bombardment against our borders to flee ISIS into Iran. And before that, there were some news reports that they tried to actually put terrorists and ISIS terrorists into the Iran. So I think that maybe they try to make Iran into the civil war. And they hope that this civil war in the long term or in the midterm would cause to regime change, or at least very, very weak government. And I think now they understand this, that they cannot achieve the regime change goal, at least in the midterm. And they try to make this, from the outside. And they try to make it from the inside.
I think they already feel it, because, I mean, the supreme leader was killed. He was assassinated, but still, Iran fires back and fires back really strongly, you know, to all of the U.S. military bases. Now, Britain has also joined. Okay, the British military base was hit. Mm-hmm. So they're firing back really seriously after the elimination of the Supreme Leader.
And you know that 80% of Americans in the polling did not want this Iran strike to happen. One of the conversations in America and that Donald Trump ran on was America First. They were done with all these endless wars that, you know, America's falling apart. Its infrastructure's falling apart. People are poor. People are not wanting this. And there's no end game. And what's been revealed over the weekend, and in fact, Donald Trump is avoiding the press, and so are his representatives as of for the last 24 hours, because they don't have a solution. Like you said, they keep presenting, you know, problems, but they're not presenting a solution. So what are you feeling as and experiencing and hearing in Iran about the days and weeks to come regarding what's happening?
Actually, my analysis is that there would be kind of a ceasefire, maybe a short-term ceasefire again, but I myself expect a kind of civil war in Iran. It would not be expanded to civil war that we've seen in Syria or other countries such as Libya or even kind of Lebanon, but they would try to make it. And in some cities, I expect some kind of unrest because of the targeting of yesterday of the United States and Israeli regime. They targeted every place that they were police, even in police station, even small police station in the districts. They bombard everywhere. And they targeted everywhere that the police and military personnel, intelligence personnel, and it shows that they try to make space for their core of terrorist teams that they fled into the Iran. They helped them. They helped them to come to the Iran. So my expectation is that this kind of direct and this war would be end during these days, but the next war is really, maybe it could be more horrible because of terrorist activities against innocent people.
And you know, a very famous Russian philosopher, Alexander Dugin, mm-hmm. when it all happened, yeah. When Iran was bombed, he wrote the Third World War has
yes,
started.
It's begun.
So, and we see the whole region, even like beyond the region, mm-hmm. is on fire. The consequences of the like oil prices, of what's going on in the Hormuz Strait, they're still to be seen because we only start seeing those mm-hmm. consequences.
Yeah.
And ironically, Vice President of the United States, J.D. Vance, he was just on the 27th of February, it was one day before the attack, he said that no way the United States would get involved in a long war in the Middle East. And now we see what? They're already prolonging this program, so to say, this attack for a month. So they're already getting involved in the swamp they've already created, ironically.
And very to add to Olga's point, apparently when the discussion was to take this action, there were only two people in the administration that were against it. It was J.D. Vance and Tulsi Gabbard, who's been very vocal through the years. Now people are calling for them to speak out or for them to resign. Because of what's going on, because obviously Lindsey Graham, you've been seeing and hearing him. He's very, if there's a yeah. war, he's there, no matter where it is. He loves war. That's Lindsey Graham. But is there hope when you know that the administration is divided, when you know the American people are now demonstrating against this action against Iran, is there hope for Iranians from your perspective, that there's enough of a coalition against a long war that maybe this can be averted?
Actually, I think so. I think long war is not the thing that Trump wants, because not because only because of this kind of coalition, political coalition against him, but because of what happened for its regional allies and also this price of oil and gas, although Donald Trump said that we are ready for all of this. But I think at the final step, he cannot resist against these comprehensive coalition, the economic issues, political ones, and also kind of public opinion of the American people who doesn't want war. And also they cannot justify that we want to keep these military personnel of the United States in the Middle East for what? They have not any evidence, any proof to justify it. Even about Iraq and Afghanistan, they had kind of wrong, and they had some lies at least. But this time, even they don't have these lies.
They don't even bother to lie, right?
Yeah, yeah. And this is kind of thing that I think long war is not something that Donald Trump wants. And because of this, I think they would stop this war in next days. But they would not stop their enemy against Iran. And they would use other tools, special terrorist activities against Iran instead.
Yeah, so we're hearing that all of this has to do with Israel wanting ultimate dominance in the region. So provoking yeah. and pushing this, and Israel and America, as you said, are kind of one. So it's domination of the resources and the land. What are some thoughts that you have about how all of this is going to play out in the next year or two? Because you know the U.S. politicians change, but there seems to be this kind of moving of foreign policy. That Olga mentioned earlier.
I would
about
say it is
dominance
dependent
in the region.
Yeah. On the elections mostly.
Yeah. So when you see Iran kind of gathering itself, how do you see it pulling together after the damage that's been done by American forces and Israeli forces?
I think even I want to back before and mention what happened in Gaza. During these 2 years of genocide of Gaza, everything got changed in the public opinion of the world. And we see in the United States how much now the young voters are against the political establishment of the United States. Maybe it's not just because of Gaza genocide, but Gaza genocide makes some awareness that what happened and what is done by the United States and Israeli regime, not even against Palestinian, against against many countries, even now against their European allies. Just see that how many times Macron, the president of France, talking about the United States and say that now we cannot trust the United States anymore. Even Japan, South Korea, during the recent years, we had many, many kind of dialogues from the allies of the United States that said that this is not the country that can protect us anymore and even don't want to protect us anymore. And this is something that happened during these years. And now after this imposing war against Iran and make the region on the fire, I think it would make some changes in the political establishment of the United States. I'm not really hopeful that it would be happening short term, but now we see some representative in the Congress that they make some statements against the U.S. establishment and hegemonies and political things. And it would be increased, I think, in the midterm.
Thank you so much. And once again, our best greetings to courageous Iranian people.
I mean, your courage and resilience is amazing. And, you know, my heart goes out to you. I hope that peace will be known in all of the world soon. And it's very sad that the American and Israeli, you know, regimes are just wanting all this war and bloodshed. So I'm hoping that cooler heads will prevail and this ends. In the meantime, Press TV is still operating. We, even after America tried to bomb, could you say just final words on that and how Press TV is doing and how your journalists are doing?
Yes, the Press TV and so all the IRIB, I mean the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, it's still operating, although they are direct threats from Israeli regime and the United States against our buildings, our personnel, even outside of their work. But they courageously, actually, they bravely keep going on their work. And I'm really have honor to be part of this, a small part of this career. And thank you for all of your solidarity.
Thank you very much, dear. Thank you so much. So that's all we have time for, but please stay connected with us on our social media. We would really appreciate your guest suggestions that are already coming up. The questions that you may want to ask but don't dare to, we'll do it in a very straightforward way here on East Meets West.
Yes, thank you for having us. And we'll be back next week with another compelling guest, and hopefully peace will come to our world.
See you. Bye.
Bye.